Hello. Yeah, I think that works. Great. Yeah, welcome to our talk. We will talk about net neutrality, obviously, with a focus on what happened in the last year and also what happened in the past years in the Netherlands, particularly because they have a net neutrality law for quite some time now. And we want to look at the experience, what sessions can be learned from it, and also look at the more global and European perspective. But first to us two. My name is Thomas Lohninger. I am based in Vienna and work there for Initiative für Netzfreiheit. I'm also a member of Digitale Gesellschaft here in Germany. And I had the privilege to work with European Digital Rights in their Brussels office during the hot phase of the negotiations about the telecom single market proposal, the net neutrality law in Europe that we will talk about.
So, and I'm Reo Zenger, and I'm working for Bits of Freedom. We are a Dutch civil rights organization. And because lots of topics which have an impact on the Netherlands are coming from a European level, we are also working a lot in Brussels with EDRI and other organizations. At the end of this talk, we would like you to remember two things. So the first thing would be ordinary citizens put net neutrality on the political agenda before, and we need to do that again. The second thing I want you to remember when you leave this hall is there are a number of unsolved issues, and we need your expertise to solve those. But first, let's get back to what is net neutrality.
Yeah, we have a simple definition here from thisisnetneutrality.org, which is also the website of the Global Coalition on Net Neutrality, where NGOs from all around the world assemble to fight a more and more globalized battle when it comes to open internet and freedom online. And basically it states that we have to keep the internet open as a platform and prevent discrimination from all sorts. You can also look at net neutrality from its principles, and there are really three principles. First is end-to-end. So the internet, different than other networks, like for example the TV network, is a network of peers, where every end node has the possibility to make a connection to any other end node. And there is no centralized control, there is no one single authorization hub where I have to register, where I have to ask for allowance for every connection that I want to establish. Instead, it's left up to the end nodes to decide whether a connection is legitimate, is correct, is legal. This is both a technological decision. Back in the days when the internet was invented, it served the purpose of implementing the optimal network design, because we didn't have the calculated power to make decisions in the network hubs. But it's also a political decision about disabling control within the network. The second principle, which is tied into that, is the best effort. Best effort means that within the internet, within the transit nodes, there should be no differentiation between packages. So every data packet is transmitted like every other, and there should be no distinction based on the protocol or the source or the destination or presumed legality of the packages. This best effort principle also applies not only to technical discrimination, but also to economic discriminations. Because what we see increasingly is that the price of certain data packages varies, that some packages cost more than others. There's a practice called zero rating, where certain services are excluded from your monthly data cap. So even if you have no megabytes left for this month, you can still use Facebook or Spotify and stuff like that. And there's a third principle that is essential for understanding the debate, and that's the reason why we have to fight this fight. Because providers want to vertically integrate along the value chain of their network. They see how much money can be made with us as consumers, with us as users who give away their data, and they just want to have a piece of the cake. They want to have a piece of the profit that Google or Amazon are making with us over their network. So in a way, they see us as their captive audience, and their goal is to establish a kind of double-sided market where they sell us, their customers, to the service providers that want to reach us, or don't just sell us internet instead, they also want to sell us each individual service that we want to use. We put these in pictures, and you might know that because that's a very popular image. It was created several years ago, and we were often called fearmongers for putting something like that up. You know, like, you have to pay if you want to play World of Warcraft or if you want to read the New York Times. So every single service suddenly has a price tag on the internet. But sadly, this has become reality. This is an offer of T-Mobile Hungary. There are even worse offers from Orange France, where you have each individual type of service with a price tag. These are actually not euros, these are Hungarian forint. But Google Translate, thank you. But we have seen huge increase in the products in Europe that violate net neutrality. According to the Digital Fuel Monitor, we are a little bit above 100 of such net neutrality violating products right now in Europe. So this is a debate which is happening really fast, and the market is creating facts. The longer politicians wait to establish any meaningful legislation that would safeguard net neutrality, the longer is their window of opportunity to just create new facts and abolish the principle of net neutrality. But now on the bright side, to the Netherlands.
So that doesn't happen if you have net neutrality enshrined by law, and that's what happened in the Netherlands. We have this law since 2013. It went in effect at the beginning of 2013. So we have this law now for about 2 years. That didn't just fall out from the sky. This law came there because of after a long debate. And in the debate, we couldn't do that by our own. We, as Bits of Freedom, we have been doing this with lots of work with volunteers. So 2 years before this debate started, we already wrote down a position paper in which we said why net neutrality is important and how it should look like. That position paper was written with the help of volunteers. And when KPN announced they were planning to monetize the use of WhatsApp by their users, people got angry, and we were able to build a campaign site and have those people explain their angriness with the politicians, with members of parliament. And only because all those people did that, it became a topic on the political agenda. And that's very important to remember, because it shows that if you are angry about something and you tell politicians about it, then something can change. And without you speaking out, that change will not happen. So then what actually we have in law? To read a law, it's very important to look first at the explanatory memorandum. It's a kind of addendum to the law, and which explains why you have this law. And in the Netherlands, the law, that explanatory memorandum is very clear. It says, the net neutrality article aims to maximize the choice and freedom of expression on the internet for end users. It also says that end users should be able to decide what content they want to send and receive. So if there is something unclear about a text in the law, if there are different interpretations of that law, then the lawyers will look at this explanatory memorandum to see how it should be, how they should decide on that. So this text in this explanatory memorandum is a very important part of the law. The law itself says, providers of internet access services do not hinder or slow down applications and services on the internet. So they are not allowed to block access to specific websites. They are not allowed to throttle access to other websites. And of course, this is a rule, so there are exceptions. And in this case, there are four exceptions. I will mention two of them. The first exception is to minimize the effects of congestion. So think of a location where you have only a limited amount of capacity. Think of a music festival. You have lots of users in a very short period and on a temporary, lots of users in a small location, and the capacity of the network may not be sufficient for the use, for all of the users. So the network operator in that case may restrict traffic certain traffic. He may restrict access to certain websites. But, and that's the second half of this sentence, it's important then that equal types of traffic, that they are treated equally. And that means if such a network operator would decide to block access to YouTube, he would also need to block access to similar websites like Vimeo. A second exception is to preserve the integrity and the security of the network and the service of the provider or the customer premises equipment, so the router of the customer. Think of a /24 that is hijacked and that is only serving nasty malware. And the nasty malware may be of harm to the network. In that case, the provider may choose to block access to that network. And then there's one other part in the provision which is very important. It's this one, and it says, providers do not make the price dependent on the services or the applications which are offered or used. So a provider is in the Netherlands not allowed to publish or to make available a new service which is competitive to the ones already on the internet and not charge for that one while charging for the other ones. Or if they get into agreement with, for example, Spotify, not charging for Spotify. So that would be in, just like Thomas already explained, it would be not, so that it would not get off from the data cap you have. So how does it compare to other laws around the world?
We made a little comparison chart about how these different laws compared to each other. And here you have like most of the net neutrality legislations that are around the world right now. And it's not only just laws, it's also what we call soft law, like self-regulation, where the regulator and the ISPs come together and make some rules, and then the ISP decides that he wants to follow this. Like a little bit like corporate social responsibility, we decide that we don't want to do the nasty stuff. These soft laws usually have the big problem that they are not enforceable. Norway was the first country ever in the world to do anything about net neutrality back in 2008. And they also have this big ISP called Telenor. And this one just decided he wants to step out of the soft regulation and just basically do whatever he wants. Telenor was also the second ISP after Comcast to go into an agreement with Netflix. So soft laws don't work. Hard law is the only stuff that really matters. Then price discrimination. That's exactly what Reo just mentioned before, that I don't discriminate based on the network, on the technical side, but only on the economical side with the pricing of certain data packages. And there we see that Chile and the Netherlands have really good solutions found for that. The Netherlands, honestly, is one of the best in the world. And on the other sides, particularly there where we have soft laws, this is not in the scope. Then prevent too wide SS. SS stands for specialized services. I'm sure you heard of that. Specialized services, we all know it as triple play. If you do not only buy internet from your ISP, but also your telephone and your TV, this is called a triple play or a specialized service, because there are other services running through the same pipes, but they are not internet. They are something different. And that's also what qualifies a specialized service. It is special. It's not just another random online service that we know from the internet. And under this category also legitimately fall things like telemedicine. If you want to do an operation, you don't want to do it over the internet. Like self-driving cars and Industry 4.0, whatever that means. If it's a critical thing, then you don't want to run it over the internet, then it is a specialized service because it's set apart from everything else that's happening in the internet. But there's a problem with that. Although we have this nicely laid out concept, which is also historically has been the way in which regulators looked at the market and looked what internet service providers did all around the world, slowly these barriers between online services and specialized services have weakened and things have been reclassified. And these days we see stuff like Spotify, like Zappos, like Dailymotion, being operated under the category of specialized services or managed services, whatever you want to call it. And they're just abusing these loopholes, which often also exist in net neutrality legislation. This is a huge thing for the European debate we'll come to in a minute. So with this knowledge, what specialized services are, we can go back to the table and see that Slovenia is actually the best country that managed to distinguish these two types of services. And the Netherlands and Chile, which have, in principle, really good legislations, just don't have this in their scope, because usually you also don't have to regulate specialized services. If you just want to keep the internet open and free, you can do this with plain and simple non-discrimination rules. And if the regulator does its job well, then usually you don't have to worry about just reclassifying services. Just to go a little bit in the other columns, blocking of competitors is usually something which comes with every net neutrality legislation. You all know that if you think Vodafone is it here in Germany, if you have a contract and they prohibit you from using Skype or any other voice over IP service so that you have to use their expensive roaming instead of going to a competitor, that's a widespread practice. Here in Europe, that you block your competitors in the terms of services so that your customers have no freedom of choice and cannot switch to another service. There are only these two laws in Europe, in the Netherlands and Slovenia. UK and Switzerland have some non-functional soft regulations. And funny enough, South Korea is the only country in Asia that ever touched the subject. We'll go to the Latin American countries later. But now to the European debate. That's really where the meat of this talk lies. In September 2013, the European Commission proposed new regulation called Telecom Single Market. That's a huge legislative package which regulates stuff like roaming, acquiring spectrums, but also net neutrality. But sadly, the net neutrality parts of this law were really like the opposite of net neutrality. They would allow ISPs to basically do everything they want, to have their vertical integration and establish themselves as gatekeepers, what we can do online. So we were really outraged about this proposal. And then we decided a year ago, here in 30C3, to start a campaign. We launched a campaign. It was already up there a year ago. And you can still find it at savetheinternet.eu. And this campaign really tipped the favor in the European Parliament. We wanted citizens to first get them informed about what's happening here and also get them engaged and do something about the internet. And we offered them three ways of doing that. First, of course, they could send an email to their parliamentarians, and also they could call them free of charge. And the really funny thing was that we also had the possibility of sending faxes to the offices of the MEPs. And this was funny and this was new, because in the European Parliament, it's like the fax machine is also the printer. So you cannot really disconnect the fax machine without also disconnecting the printer. And so people could just go to the website. We had some boilerplate texts, which were also at the current debate, you know, like which committee is discussing what. But people could also just put in their random messages and make their message come out physically in the office of the MEP. And this was a huge success. Here's some facts about it. Over 40,000 faxes were send out, click, at least from 21,000, we can say for sure that they were also delivered, because we only had three SS7 gateways, so at the high peaks there were much more faxes that we could send through. But still, this is a lot of paper and dead trees. The website we had, Save the Internet, was translated in 9 languages, and I want to touch on this subject, because particularly for this technical audience, this might be interesting. A whole website was on GitHub. So the source code of our campaign website was on an open source collaborative portal. And so everybody could look at the source code, propose changes, and we also had a README section where you could learn how to translate the whole website. And that's the reason why we managed to have 9 translations, even in Albanian. They are not even part of the EU, but somebody from Albania thought, this is an important issue, I want my people to be informed about it. So I think this is really a best practice for the digital civil liberties community, that we should open source our campaigns, not only that others can learn from it, but also to allow other people to get engaged and maybe elaborate on language, on languages, or just find typos. And yeah, I mentioned before that I had the privilege to work in Brussels with the European Digital Rights Office, and we did a lot of advocacy work there. You have to understand, EDRI, European Digital Rights, as well as Access Now, are the two only organizations that take care of our civil liberties within Brussels, in the European bubble. And they do a tremendously important work, and we did so many things over these months, but few on a highlight, because they're also best practices. We analyzed each and every amendment that was tabled to the legislative text. We wrote booklets, we wrote many one pages, for example, to get small and medium-sized companies involved in the debate. Net neutrality is also a competition issue. And they helped us a lot, because suddenly it was not just left liberals, civil liberty people calling the MEPs, it was companies from their own country telling them, I will lose my existence, or I will have a much harder time competing online if you pass this legislation. And this helped a lot. And one thing why this lady here, Neelie Kroes, the commissioner for the digital agenda back then, is on the beamer right now, is that we also had many lobby documents that we created to kind of keep ahead of the narrative, which was always pressured because the telco lobby was always fighting with us. It was a really short-term battle. And we had one really good trick which worked well, which was that we made our messages funny. We wrote subtitles to speeches of the commissioner, which not only showed real meaning of what he was saying, but they also were funny. They revealed the truth, and the assistants liked them. The assistants sent it around to their friends in the parliament. And so our messages spread really widely, much faster than they would usually do. We have to look at the time, but to finish up with Europe. That's basically the outcome that we had. We won in plenary with the votes of the Social Democrats, the Liberals, the Greens, and the Left. And we got real net neutrality. You will see it later in the legal comparison. This is a huge success because nobody believed that we would actually make it in the European Parliament. It was so close to the election, it's such a complex issue, but still, because people got engaged, we could turn the favor, and the parliamentarians passed a really good text. Thank you. Still, the text is not perfect because enforcement is weak, but we'll come to that later. First, I want to go to the basic principle of how a law is done in Europe. Looks like that. The Commission proposes legislation. Only the Commission can do that. And then it has to go through the Parliament, where all the representatives that we all vote sit, the 751 people, and we have the Council, where the 28 member states sit. So mostly the ministries. When it comes to net neutrality, it's mostly the economic or the infrastructure ministry that deals with these things. So currently we're at this stage. The Commission proposed really shitty text, which would kill net neutrality. The Parliament saved it, and now it's up to the Council, because it's 1-1. And the Council is the fight where we are right now. And to give you an overview, again, in the same scheme as before, the Commission proposed something really bad, which basically fails on all levels. The Parliament did a great job. They put the solution forward. Then the Italian presidency had two proposals. More or less, both of them were shit. And then the Polish and the Dutch government came forward with really good language. They more or less oriented themselves on the Dutch legislation and really proposed a good text. We're speaking of October, November here, and it really looked good back then. But this December, Germany put forward a text which changed the whole game, because Germany proposed a text which would basically allow all sorts of discrimination on all levels. They even allow blocking your competitors, which is something most national legislations would never do. And even the Italians allowed that, but the Germans still would allow that in their text. And the real satirical thing is that they're selling this as a compromise. Merkel is saying, this is a compromise between the internet society and the industry lobby. It is not a compromise, not even closely. And we have to call them out, particularly the Social Democrats, because it's Sigmar Gabriel who is negotiating this. And the Social Democrats still have some pressure points. They still feel something. I think the Conservatives are lost in this issue. But with the Social Democrats, I think there is still hope. And this is an issue which has to be resolved within Germany. In the Council, we have some other big countries which are opposing us. And so if Germany is following up on this line, the outlook is quite bad. So, Save the Internet was relaunched in a version 2.0, and we now have a new website which allows you to send emails to the ministries and the permanent representatives of your country. Again, you have boilerplate emails, but it's better if you write your own text, why you think net neutrality is important from your perspective. And just to summarize the European stuff, there's a basic premise, a basic goal behind what the Commission and Germany, as well as the UK and Spain, all countries with big incumbent telcos like Deutsche Telekom, like Vodafone, like Telefonica, big ISPs that are domestically engaged, they all want market consolidation. This means instead of the like 150 small and medium ISPs that we have right now in Europe, they want to shrink it down to just four big pan-European ISPs. Very similarly to the way the American market is structured right now. There are several reasons for that. They believe that this will boost the economy of sales, it would create more jobs, and ultimately it would lead to more infrastructure investment. They know that it will cost billions to make Europe fit when it comes to fiber, to the new bandwidths that we all need for the 21st century. And they believe this bet that if we give the ISPs regulatory holidays, they will just start investing in infrastructure. The second summary I have to take is that we suck in the Council. We are really good at getting people engaged to the Commission and also to the Parliament. But when it comes to the Council, where all 28 member states sit, as internet society, we don't have the capacity or the architecture to really put pressure on them. Organizations like Greenpeace can do that because they are in every country and coordinate pan-Europeanly. We still have to catch up in this regard because we see this not only in net neutrality, also the fight about data retention and data protection was similar. And I have to hurry up. National fallbacks are necessary because if we fail with this law, the earliest we will get European legislation that would safeguard net neutrality is 2018. And remember what I said before, the market is creating facts. So we may not have time until 2018 at the earliest. So maybe national fallbacks are necessary to at least keep the principle alive in some European countries. Now, to the Dutch experience.
Thank you. So before we had net neutrality in the Netherlands, the telcos were explaining to the people, like in, if you have net neutrality by law, then your subscription will be a lot more expensive than it is now. And I can tell you, our experience, that's not the case. Maybe it has become a bit more expensive, but definitely not that expensive. That is a lot of difference. But what did we experience? So the Dutch law is being enforced by an NRA named ACM. It's the Authority for Consumers and Markets. And I would say that the enforcement is mediocre at best. There have been five investigations have started, and three of those are still underway, and only two of them have a ruling. One of those rulings is quite good, the other one is surprisingly bad. The first one is with internet in a train, and internet in a train in the Netherlands is more like this. So the internet in a train is offered by T-Mobile via the mobile network. And of course, that one is limited and is frequently changing capacity that is available. And without network management, of course, that would be not working at all. So the Dutch Railways is blocking access to video websites and is throttling file sharing protocols. And the question brought forward to the NRA was, is that a violation of net neutrality? The NRA said, we believe that in this case, blocking and delaying services that require large capacity is necessary to minimize the effects of congestion on mobile connection. So the NRA said it's not a violation because, for one, it's necessary because there's a limited capacity available, and second, because the blocking and slowing down is done indiscriminately. So this is not a violation of the Dutch net neutrality law, and I think that's that sounds reasonable to me. The other case is SIS, which is a kind of a brand of the telco Vodafone and the content provider RTL. Their offer is a subscription where you can have voice, text and internet access on your mobile phone. And in addition to that, you can get an app. And that app allows the customers to watch RTL content without charging the customer's data plan. So you get that RTL content for free. In other words, that's what they call zero-rated or sponsored data. That's a clear violation of net neutrality, of course, both in the principle and the net neutrality law in the Netherlands. But the NRA's response to this one is a bit curious. In the end, they say Vodafone will end this violation by offering the SIS app as a separate service, which can be used independent to the internet access service. So the NRA agrees that this is a violation and something needs to change. SIS may proceed, provided that the SIS app is offered as a separate service, they name it like that. So practically, this means that you as a consumer may get a subscription where you can get voice and text, and you can get the app and see the RTL content, even if you don't have internet access on that subscription. But it also means that if you have a subscription where you have voice, text and internet access, you also get this separate service for free. And that means that in the end, nothing has changed because you have subscriptions with full internet access and next to it an RTL app with content that comes free. So in my opinion, this solution they thought of is not a real solution because the net neutrality violation is still intact. So it's a horrible ruling, and I've been told that the Minister of Economic Affairs wasn't amused when they became aware of this ruling. So what are the open debates? In the Netherlands, the Ministry of Economic Affairs is drafting a new policy document which would make some of those edge cases, which are not clear now, which would clarify those situations. And there are three topics which are mentioned in this document. First of all, the question, should an ISP that provides you with net neutrality connection, should they do also IPv6? Should they be forced to provide IPv6? The government says, okay, that's not the case because IPv4 and IPv6 is what is used as a transport layer, and net neutrality is only about the services that are used, that are provided over this layer. So IPv6 would not be a requirement if you have net neutrality. The other thing they are discussing is what exactly is a internet access service. So that's the word that is used in the law, but it's not, that doesn't have a definition. So they are debating on what is actually an internet access service. So the internet in a train, that's a clear example. Everybody agrees that's something which should be, where net neutrality should apply. But for example, internet access in a hotel, that's a different case and they haven't yet decided. I think this will in the end, the internet access in a hotel will not have the net neutrality law applied. And then the SysApp already mentioned, and also what Thomas already mentioned, you have these separate services, manager service, single services, and I think that the policy document that is drafted now will provide more clear structure on that as well.
Okay. Yeah, now we go to, yeah, thank you. Now we go to the global debate. I think you may have noticed that there was something going on in the US. Verizon succeeded in killing the old regulation about net neutrality in the US. They just said that this hinders their freedom of speech to discriminate the content within their networks, and they actually got through with it, and they killed the old regulation that the American regulator FCC proposed. And then this huge battle started in the US, where also, again, a lot of civil society was engaged. Our sister campaign, SafeTheInternet.com, was revised, and many civil society groups, as well as Silicon Valley, joined into the fight, because the new rules the FCC proposed were really horrible, similarly to what the Germans just proposed or the Commission originally put forward. And then also things happened, like John Oliver touched the issue of net neutrality in his very popular Daily Show. And this all spiked and aggregated so that around 4 million comments were submitted to the consultation the FCC had put up for their new rules. And in general, we can say the question in the US really boils down to public opinion versus industry lobbying. There is no question about the public opinion. Even in conservative Republican circles, net neutrality is seen as a good thing for competition, for freedom of speech, for various reasons. But still, the industry lobby manages to make it a political issue and still delay the decision. And then Obama came out and like publicly said net neutrality is important and we have to make it a law. And the rules he proposed in his statement also look really fine drafted, like he understood the problem and proposed a real solution. But sadly, he is not the person to decide. It's this guy, whom he appointed, Tom Wheeler, the current chair of the American Regulatory Authority, FCC. It's his decision whether or not we'll have net neutrality in the US or not. And we'll see, I guess, in 2015, this decision will fall either way. But it's definitely boils down to versus public opinion versus industry lobbying. But it's not just the US and the EU. This debate is global. And particularly in Africa, net neutrality is a huge issue. Because most people there don't have any internet access at all. But what they sometimes have is so-called Facebook Zero, where everything they have from the internet is just Facebook, or Google, or Twitter. Those big companies that can afford to pay for the data that the customers need to reach them, or the users need to reach them, those put up crazy stuff like Zeppelins that get their internet from a satellite and then project a GSM network in really rural areas. They really take money in their hands to bring internet in rural areas, but not real internet, only their services. And so there is a huge part of the population in some areas which only has these services. That's everything they know from the internet. And this is really important if we look at development theory. I mean, I'm an anthropologist, and this is a topic close to me. What we are doing in the global south is establishing new dependency circles. We're making these economies dependent on us, on our Western services. We actively prevent local services to come up, startups in Africa that come up with the real needed services that the people have. There are good examples for that. Africa has established elaborate SMS payment and information systems. SMS is often the only means of communication that the people have electronically. And still they manage to compensate with these tools the fact that most Africans don't have bank accounts. So there is a real need for modern telecommunications technology in this continent. But still, the way this is heading is making the global south even more dependent to Western companies. And this is similarly, in a way, the case in Asia, where also zero rating is really common. But the net neutrality debate is not. South Korea is the only country that has legislation on this topic, and it's not really good. And in general, the net neutrality paradigm is not really widespread in Asia. Differently so in Latin America. As I mentioned before, Chile was the first country to make a law about net neutrality, and actually a quite good one. It was copied by Peru and Ecuador. Recently, also Brazil adopted the Marco Civil, a constitutional law about internet, which also includes provision about net neutrality. And also Mexico recently put a law forward, which is not good, but still, they did something on this topic. So Latin America is a really interesting area when it comes to net neutrality. Another final thing I want to mention is probably something a little bit heated, but I feel really strongly about it, and I want to speak out about it. We all love Wikipedia, and but sadly there is a stain on that love, at least for me. Wikipedia Zero is a product of Wikipedia. It's a project which they run, where they do exactly the same as Facebook, basically. They pay for the data that, or they make agreements with ISPs. There's actually no money flowing, but they make agreements with ISPs so that Wikipedia is excluded from any data charges. So if I have a feature phone and I have only a contract where I have a few SMS and a few minutes per month, I can phone with somebody and I have no internet, I can still see Wikipedia, I can still edit Wikipedia, but that's the only thing I see from the internet. Of course, they're doing this to foster the sum of all human knowledge. They want to get their market, their service out there to more people. Like Facebook, they see that only 1 billion people is in the internet, but there are much more people in the world, and so why don't we try to reach those? Ultimately, it's also about brand, establishing themselves in these new markets, which will soon have internet and hopefully will develop. But imagine if Encyclopedia Britannica had a service like this 10 years ago. Something like Wikipedia never could have come into existence, because there would already be one incumbent player that's hugely dominant, that has a free access to all the customer base. And it doesn't matter if it's the best service, but it's free. And so people will use that. And Wikipedia as a community project never would have taken off and come to the point where they are right now. So the reason, I mean, this is all known for quite some time, but the reason why I wanted to mention this here is because of this letter. Chile amended its net neutrality law to prohibit price discrimination, zero rating. They want to outlaw that as well. And Wikimedia actively engaged in the policy debate in Chile and fought this amendment, fought civil rights legislation to keep loopholes in there that would allow them to offer Wikipedia Zero. And this was the tipping point for me, where I thought this is not going in the right direction. If a public foundation actively engages in a policy battle abroad in another country to fight good legislation that has been pushed for by civil society, we really have a problem we have to talk about. And also, even if we accept the basic premise that Wikipedia Zero is a good thing, it's hard to question whether Chile is the right country for it, because Chile is not Africa. In Chile, you have to spend like 2% of your monthly income to afford a mobile prepaid internet subscription. That's similarly to Denmark. You know, we are not speaking of a country where there is no internet. In average, per 100 people in Chile, they have 130 mobile subscriptions. So we're not speaking of a developing country. Still, I've been at Wikimania and I've talked with people from the foundation that are tasked with dealing these things. And there are country criteria for which countries Wikipedia Zero is considered or not. they said they would publish them. Actually, so far they've done nothing. And I think to end this debate, we have to go back to the vision statement of the Wikimedia Foundation. Imagine a world in which every single human being can freely share the sum of all knowledge. This is our commitment. And I'm questioning whether this sum of all knowledge can only be one service of the internet. Because what they're doing is also they are opening the floodgates. Facebook Zero is right behind them. Once Wikipedia Zero is established in a country, there is no way you can prevent Facebook Zero from following on their steps. And so we really have to look at the larger picture here, whether we want to continue in this direction. And I also have to say that there is a battle within Wikimedia, and it's mostly the foundation and some lawyers within the foundation that are pushing for this. On local chapters, it might look differently.
So for time constraints, I'm going to do this rather quickly. So remember at the beginning, I was talking about the two things you should remember when you're leaving this room. The first thing was ordinary citizens put net neutrality on the political agenda before, and we need to do that again. So that's what Thomas discussed about the European legislation. If we want net neutrality enshrined in European law, then you need to get in touch with your ministries in your member state, because only that will make them convinced that the PEEP that you think in a net neutrality is important. So you need, so you can do that. So go to the website savetheinternet.eu and help make this point. If you want to do more, get in touch with your regional, national, digital civil rights organization and do and help them with whatever you're good at. And if you can't spend any time, do a donation and help them financially. The other thing I mentioned in the beginning was there are unsolved issues and civil society needs your expertise. So one of those unsolved issues is the one that goes on the problem with peering and transits. I'm not going into details on that now, but if you want to help think with us on that, then come to Noisy Square tomorrow at 5, where we have a workshop and where we will discuss that problem. For now, question everything. Thank you. Are you one?
Thank you very much. Even though it took longer than initially planned, we still have quite some time for questions. Let's start here in the hall on mic 3 and then go to the internet.
Yeah, there's a couple of things which are quite important for networking as well. There's first, you want to have a level playing field, not just at the IP level, but also on the fiber. So I think probably some of you already know StockUp, which is in Stockholm. They have a municipality-owned fiber operator, and that's like 10 years ago already, it was very common in Stockholm to get a fiber to home. At that time, it was 100 megabits or something like that. But that's kind of critical. Also, if you look at the new U.S. market, Google Fiber is doing the same thing over there. That's. I had some other points as well, but there's also the complaint that the operators always keep complaining about how they can't profitably run something. It's important to tell them that, okay, fine, we give that job to somebody else, because not just the fibers, but just about every service, you can, if you level the playing field, there will be someone who wants that market. And at the moment, if Deutsche Telekom tells you that they can't do it, then in the process you can also screw the Deutsche Telekom, which is a very big benefit. Okay, that's.
While you think of an answer, can I please remind everybody who is leaving, be quiet. Thank you.
Okay. Just some question, one comment about what you said, and particularly mentioning Stockholm. Personally, just as a note, I think functional separation is something we should aim for. And I would like to see functional separation in the political programs of political parties, because that's honestly the only real solution for the competition problem. As long as a company owns the infrastructure and also provides the access service over it, there will be no real competition. Only if you separate those two, you can really adequately assess the cost of infrastructure investment. You can have a logical decision about where to invest in infrastructure, and you have a race to the top instead of to the bottom when it comes to offering the maximum bandwidth technically possible.
Now a question from the internet.
Is this on? Yeah. There's one question, whether there is collaboration sought with the Internet Society, the ISOC, to gain people power for Brussels?
Particularly Access Now is working on this field with the international internet bodies. There is also the Net Neutrality Coalition, which was founded to more foster the academic debate, but they're also close to all the IGF and similar bodies. And there has been talk about like establishing net neutrality as a basic principle on a UN level. But these are all long-term programs, and usually they don't kick back towards the real hard national or supranational policy debates that we have in Europe or in the US. Definitely for the long term, I think this is something we have to look at, but short, medium term, I think not much will happen there.
Now on microphone one, please.
Thank you very much. Thank you for your talk, and thank you for the great work already done for the European Parliament. Now the fight is in the Council. That means that the fight is in all of the European member states. The problem is that we need to organize the fight that you did in the Netherlands for each national state. How do we do that? How do we engage consumer organizations and make this about competition, equal markets, and consumers? Because they weren't part of the organizations that you mentioned there.
We actually established an answer to that. It's a global coalition on net neutrality, which is a network of NGOs all around the world that care about net neutrality. A good example is recently in Tunis, an ISP proposed new products, which is very similar to the ones that the KPN ISP in the Netherlands proposed that kind of push the debate towards the point where the net neutrality law was established. And because we had this global network, we could provide the local Tunisian NGO with all the information, all the arguments, all the materials they needed to quickly respond to this threat. So this is a global debate, and we'll see it pop up in many more countries. And I think only global collaboration and information sharing and open source can help to really win this battle, because the other side has so much more money than we.
So, and in addition to that, Thomas already mentioned during the talk that we suck at the Council. That's a problem which is not limited to net neutrality debate only. So I think that the NGOs in Europe need to make an effort there and see how we can do this better. So for Netherlands, it's fairly easy. We are a fairly professional organization, but it's not just about Netherlands. It's also about other countries, where other member states, where they have less organized, where there's less organized organizations. So I'm not sure what the actual answer is to your question, but it's definitely a hard one, and definitely one we need to fix.
Now back to mic three.
Well, the comment on the train, they could just use prescribed bandwidth limits. But my questions are, is there any exemptions for emergency services in zero rating, for example? Because on the traditional LAN voice calls, you don't even need a subscription or even a SIM card in your phone to call the emergency services. So is there exemptions like that around? And what about costs, price into things differently based on the cost of providing the service? For example, could I give my lodger 100 megabit Ethernet cable to my 10 megabit ADSL line, but they still access my PC at much faster speeds because local traffic is much cheaper to provide. So can local traffic be higher bandwidths? The scale could apply to interplanetary traffic as well, as well as that, for example.
So I'm not sure whether I understand the question correctly, but if it is that you could make a difference in a subscription for local traffic and have a different price attached to that compared to traffic which is non-local, then I think that is not a good idea. But and it would not work for the within the Dutch rules we have now.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure if that. If I gave an answer to your question.
I make another attempt to answer what I understood. I mean, we had this, usually net neutrality legislation doesn't prohibit you from, for example, prioritizing emergency numbers. Or also to like, if you have SSH sessions, which you need to administer the infrastructure, those of course can be prioritized. These things which fulfill a purpose and you then implement this purpose, application agnostic, so to all providers and protocols which fulfill this purpose, then that's totally in line with net neutrality. Application agnostic, you can do a lot of things, particularly when it comes to that. And to the payment part, I was not totally sure what you mean. It's definitely not in line with net neutrality that you pay according to the geographical distance the data is flowing, or of course, an ISP can differentiate themselves from the bandwidth they are offering you, the access technology they are offering you. These things are okay. It starts getting critical when you look inside the data stream and you make a differentiation between the service that you actually use in this pipe. I don't know. Answer this.
But my question is, can they charge differently for different pipes out their network? Or something like
that. No. And usually you have like the abstraction layer. You often don't know which local physical pipe any connection will run through, and within one session, the actual physical route that a package is taking can change. So this would not work.
Okay. Time is getting close to an end, but microphone 3, please.
Okay, I'm working for a small ISP, actually, and we are fully supporting net neutrality. And you took the answer to my question right now. My question is, if we take all packages equally, then maybe voice over IP calls may get some bad connections. And if you would implement a quality of service for this, would this fulfill the mind of net neutrality, or would it be something broken?
Yeah. So, remember the explanatory memorandum I showed in the beginning. That tells what the goal is of the Dutch net neutrality law. The goal is, again, to maximize the freedom of speech, the freedoms of the internet user. So with that in mind, doing quality of service to a certain extent is acceptable because it will improve this freedom. If you would not apply this quality of service, then the freedom would deteriorate. So, for example, voice over IP, it's very helpful to do some quality of service there, because otherwise you can't make a call. And doing the quality of service, you provided you do this for all VoIP in the same way, that will help freedom, so that will be okay.
And one last question from microphone 2, please.
Well, it's not the question, it's more like a comment. I think you did the talk last year on this one, right? Well, back then it seemed like everything is doomed and nothing can be changed anymore. And I was quite surprised coming in here today and hearing all this stuff, because my attention drifted away from it. And all I wanted to say is, like, thank you for whatever you did. It's just magic that it happened to be like this right now.
So again, it's not what we did, or we did. Not only, it's what you did.
Yes.
Because all of you went to save the internet of the EU and send that fax to the members of parliament.
Yeah.
And that made a change.
And if you didn't, you have to do it now.
Yeah. Unfortunately. That's all the time we have. So once again, thank you for your talk and for your input and the political work of everybody here.